This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The celebration includes giveaways, special appearances, and a chance to win some cold hard cash sponsored by Santander Bank to kick off the perfect season to make memories with family and friends at Patriot Place.
Boston, for the first time in 40 years, Wasp will perform their entire debut album from start to finish on the Album One Alive World Tour, performing live at the Orpheum Theater in Boston on Friday.
This is Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI. On WEEI.
Joe Mazzulla, Celtics, convincing win over the Brooklyn Nets, a team they struggled with two weeks ago, whenever it was. Not an easy win for them. And Brooklyn could end up being one of those feisty teams, but they're going to be food for the Celtics this year. Teams like that, I think, are just going to be food for the Celtics. And I would have said that about the Atlanta Hawks as well, but the Hawks scoring a win over the Celtics in the in-season tournament and I don't want to say panicking. Giles, I think, summarized this very well. We're not panicking yet. No one's panicking about this team. But there is, at the beginning of the year, we were talking about things like wins records, and we were talking about stuff like that, and I didn't think that that was out of bounds to even bring up, and it's still possible. I mean, they've only lost three games. They could still win the most games any Celtics team's ever won. They're not on pace to do that right now, but it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility, and going 10-3 to start the year is nothing to be ashamed of or worried about or anything.
But you can be disappointed.
You can be a little disappointed.
Giles said no when I asked him if he was disappointed, and then he kind of articulated being disappointed. Mm. He mentioned that he thought this team could win 70 games, that we were talking about being in rarefied air in terms of wins, and 10-3 is not rarefied air.
No.
It just isn't. It's a good record. It's probably maybe in line for the number one seed when it's all said and done, when Cleveland comes back to reality.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, so with that in mind, and this may be too early to be asking these questions, but you already have had Jaylen Brown go down with an injury.
Yep.
Kristaps Porzingis is out.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know when he's coming back exactly, but we know it'll be relatively soon. Anyway,
he is traveling. Do you notice that?
He's moving with them. Yeah, he was on the bench last night.
I thought that was so that stood out to you too?
Yeah, and White after the game was like, yeah, he was like a coach.
Yeah.
He was like coaching the team. I was like, okay, that's great.
And I guess he's been pretty active in practice, so okay, that's trending in the right direction.
Sure.
December.
And, you know, coming back from surgery, I wouldn't want to rush anything, certainly not with this team. And that's sort of the question I want to ask here right now. We all hate the idea of load management, right?
Yes.
It's the NBA. Go out there and play. Well, you're already sort of, I don't know, you're already kind of at the point where the wins record and things like that may be distractions, right? A distraction that you don't need to necessarily focus on. Not something you need to, all right, guys, buckle down. We got to go out there and get that wins record. If that's the case, and you know that you're good, and the Celtics know they're good. Missoula knows they're good. Brad Stevens at Wick, everybody knows they're a good team. They're probably the best team in the league. Every team that plays them knows they're good.
Mm-hmm.
Load management, I mean, I don't think it's a crazy idea. I know that they're trying to get that out of the league, and Adam Silver hates that, and they'll probably get a, you know, scowl and Drew Carter
get
probably
a text.
Get text messages about it. Don't mention load management. But I don't think it's a crazy idea, and I think that when you're at this level of good, like the Celtics are, you have to consider these things, especially if it, you think it may, one or two injuries could sink you. I mean, that's something that the Spurs have had to deal with, the Cleveland's, LeBron's teams, Miami, Golden State, all these teams. They all do load management.
And that's why the Jaylen Brown injury, and the way it's not an acute injury, it's probably more of just a long-term management thing, kind of stuck up to me. Like, okay, that's something you got to consider. And Giles is right. If it was that big a deal, they're probably not playing him in back-to-backs right now. But they did. He played well. Mm-hmm. He looks fine. I don't see any reason. I was sort of just basing it on his own words more than anything else. But no, they absolutely, their focus, more than mine, yours, entertainment value, Adam Silver, anything, is to put up another banner, is to go back-to-back. That is their singular goal this season. And you're right. The sooner you maybe get rid of, oh, going undefeated at home, oh, wins record, chasing this, sooner you really put those away so no one even brings them up, probably the better. And then just play regular. I mean, we lived it a little bit around here in a different, totally different way, but remember when Patrice Bergeron played in front of his dad? Is that what it was?
Yes, in Montreal.
And then got hurt, mm-hmm. and there were ramifications for that,
there
correct?
Were. Yep.
So, like, when you start to do things outside, even last night, not going back in, I mean, not chasing a triple-double, I like that. Don't do that. We don't need that. Like, you'll have plenty of triple-doubles in your career, Jason Tatum, karma, whatever you want to call it. So, yes, I think this team and Joe Mazzulla should be singularly focused on winning a title, and whatever he deems that path to be, however load management works for anybody and everybody. Mm-hmm. We're certainly going to be talking about this with Porzingis when he's back.
100%. So, and with him, it's different because he's active, he's hurt all the time. But for someone like Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
For someone like Derek White, you know, for someone like
Drew Holiday,
who didn't get off to a great start this year. Yeah.
Sneaky old.
He had a good game last night, but he's not had a good start.
And no one likes to include him in the older Celtics. It's always Al Horford. Drew Holiday, sneaky old.
Yeah.
So if he needs some time off, because he plays a very, I would say, demanding style of basketball, right? Both ends of the floor. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a certain wear and tear on him. If he needs it, yes, absolutely. Manage the hell out of it. I'll bitch about not having certain guys on the court for certain games because it hurts my entertainment value when I sit down with the Miller Lite to watch the game, but that's on me. I'll also cheer when you win a title.
Yeah. There is some news from the Red Sox today.
Is there?
It's not really
Soto?
News. It was no, it's not Juan Soto. It's from earlier today. We haven't talked much about it here, and we just did a Red Sox segment, and we didn't even mention this, but the Red Sox have signed a pitcher.
Who?
They have signed left-hander Justin Wilson.
I said who?
Robert Murray of FanSided was the first to break it, I believe. Rob Bradford, our own Rob Bradford, reporting it's a one-year major league deal that will pay Wilson similarly to his 2024 contract with the Reds, in which he earned $1.5 million with another $1 million available via incentives. Wilson is 37 years old, lengthy track record in the majors, but has struggled with injuries in recent seasons, returned from Tommy John surgery last year. Tommy John surgery at 36? Yeesh. To pitch 46 and two-thirds innings for Cincinnati, a 5.59 ERA in that time. A good portion of those struggles due to spikes in his average on balls in play and home run rate, the latter of which directly influenced by the hitter-friendly nature of his home park in Cincinnati. Well, it's a good thing they got him to a real pitcher's park like Fenway. otherwise, you know, I'd really worry about this guy. The Red Sox offseason has officially begun. They're signing. They're wheeling and dealing. Welcome Justin Wilson to the Red Sox, to the Fenway Sports Group. What do you think of this?
I like it. This is the kindling. This is the fire starter. This is the little sticks
you
that
like
are going to get the blaze going.
What do you like about this?
Nothing.
Come on.
He's a pitcher. He's left-handed, right? You said left-handed?
Yes.
Okay. So he's left-handed.
He's a 37-year-old lefty journeyman who had an ERA hovering around six last year.
But you know sometimes these guys can go like a couple months as your best pitcher.
That's true.
Out of the bullpen.
Does happen,
you know what I mean? It happens all the time. Mm-hmm. Middle relievers, these journeyman guys. You know when I least want to sign one of these guys? After a good year. Because I think they're due for a down year. This guy's good, due for an up year.
Mm-hmm.
See? The law of due. Pushing for you.
Bernardino, the only lefty reliever who could be projected comfortably for the upcoming bullpen. Guys like Bailey Horn, Cam Boozer, and Chris Murphy are on the 40-man roster. Horn and Boozer don't really have, you know, like, I like Boozer. I thought at certain points last year, Boozer was your best reliever. At various points in the season last year, he was the only guy I felt comfortable with them putting in there. That includes Kenley Jansen. There was three stretches like that. So maybe that plays to what you were just talking about. Like, sometimes, and Boozer was a guy who came from like the independent league, you know, like he was a real project and finally making the majors in his 30s for the first time. Like, that was a whole inspirational story this past year, and I hope that he stays because they don't have a lot of good lefties, and I'm not sure this Wilson guy is going to be the next guy, you know. So I'd be interested in seeing what that looks like and how that whole thing shapes up. I feel like the bullpen has been totally lost in this conversation. We're talking about starters, we're talking about Soto. The bullpen has been at least by people like us, completely neglected. I hope that's not the case in the Craig Breslow's office, because you do need to work on some things there, and you need a new closer. But that's sort of the forgotten part of this team that no one's really mentioning.
Well, it's a little bit like the Red Sox. Like, so you need an elite bat, you need an ace, and you need a closer.
Yeah.
Oh, is that all?
Other than that, you got a great team. It's true. They need all those things.
I've heard no one talk about the closer situation. Everybody's been talking about Crochet.
Jansen couldn't get out of here fast enough. He took the first play before the season was over.
And I'm fine with that. Like, I was kind of done with him. I didn't really love how that played out at the end. I don't think Alex Cora loved how that played out at the end. But you need a closer.
Yeah.
And I mean that. You need a closer. We're not going back to any days of closer by committees or any of these things. You need a closer. And you might be the first person I've really heard mention that. I've actually seen more mention of Kenley Jansen in, like, free agent previews where he could go than the idea that he's leaving Boston and therefore leaving a hole behind him.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I certainly hope that Breslow's not like, well, I took care of that bullpen, Justin Wilson. Like, no. Let's get some more arms in here. Let's work this out a little bit more. One thing you can say about the Red Sox and their minor league pipeline is that they do have a lot of position players, don't have a lot of pitchers, either starters or relievers. So that's something you're going to have to find from outside the organization in most of these cases, assuming you're going to fill a bunch of different spots here. And I don't know exactly who they're planning on bringing back or
Mason
what they're going to do. We'll see about that.
I've been
that.
On the Mason Miller train since, remember, he was supposedly on the block.
Yeah.
Then he broke a finger or something, and he missed some time, and I think that kind of fudged everything up from that perspective. But he would be my target. So all I want now is Crochet, Soto, and Miller, and I'm ready to roll.
Okay. That's a good place to start. Let's go to Steve in Fall River. Go ahead, Steve.
How are you guys?
I'm fine. What's happening there, Steve?
Who's yelling?
Yeah, what
My daughter's calling me about my mother and this and that. I'll call her back. Okay. She'll get over it.
Family can take a back
seat.
I gotta
talk to the world. The world needs to hear from me.
Steve, I hear from you every day. Just real quick, Steve, I hear from you every day. No matter what station and what show I'm listening to, I'm hearing Steve from Fall River. You are on a heater right now. You're calling every show. So what do you got?
It's my 24,000 or 24,500 call.
Uh-huh.
Jesus. You know.
Something like that, yes. Anyway, what's on your mind, Steve?
I'm glad Andy encapsulated. Who cares if they're in rarefied air, the Celtics, by the way? I don't care. That's insanity. It means nothing. And you would think it means nothing after the Bruins pulled that stunt winning the best record ever. And that lasted, what, 3 days? That was a good thing? So that's complete nonsense. They'll do what they got to do, even if they underperform what we think their win total should be. As far as the Red Sox go, they might get Juan Soto, they might not, but it's not a litmus test on what John Henry's doing or not doing, as far as I'm concerned. How did Atlanta feel about getting Chris Sale? Were they happy about that?
When he couldn't make the playoffs? Yeah, they were happy about that.
When he went through the whole regular season and then what? Couldn't make the last start of the year, didn't pitch in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Guy's a clown. We don't need bad contracts. We need good contracts.
I think you could have used Chris Sale last year, your playoff team, if you have Chris Sale last year.
So you couldn't have had him in the playoffs.
I don't care if you have him in the playoffs or not, Steve. If you make the playoffs, that's more important. That's what it matters. If you don't make the playoffs, then you don't even have to worry about that. But if you make the playoffs and he's injured, at least you're there.
100 times all year, everybody across the says, well, you had to get rid of Chris Sale. Now you're pining for Chris Sale. Forget Chris Sale. Let's go. Let me say one more thing. I've been torturing you guys about this left tackle nonsense. I finally did the rest of the league. Andy,
yes.
I don't want to be Andy Dufresne and tell you you're obtuse, but my point is you don't take Warden Andy, you don't take a top 10 pick in my world just to say you solved your problem at left tackle. There's 15 left tackles with a number one pick. Three of them were not taken by the team, so there's 12 tackles out of 32.
All right, Steve, I can't do this right now. I'm sorry. We started on the Red Sox, and now we're talking about left tackles again. We're jumping all over the place. I gave you plenty of time. Thanks for the call, Steve. We love you. 617-779-7937. Tom E. Curran joins the program right after Stiz gets you caught up on what's trending.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, let's get you caught up with what's trending this hour on WEEI and WEEI.com. Celtics beat the Nets 139-114 in Brooklyn last night. Jason Tatum led the Boston Celtics, scoring with 36 points. Jaylen Brown followed behind him with 24. Celtics will head home to host the Raptors on Saturday night. Tip-off from Causeway Street at 8 p.m. Bruins in Dallas tonight to take on the Stars. Puck drops at 8 p.m. from the American Airlines Center. Head coach Jim Montgomery told media earlier today that defenseman Hampus Lindholm will be sidelined for multiple weeks with a lower body injury. The Bruins have also called up forward Patrick Brown from Providence. Patriots back on the practice field today, and Christian Barmore returned to the practice field today. This marked the first time the defensive lineman has been involved in practice since he was diagnosed with blood clots in July. Patriots will host the Rams on Sunday afternoon, kickoff from Gillette Stadium at 1 p.m. And some Thursday night football tonight, the 7-3 Commanders in Philly to take on the 7-2 Eagles, kickoff at 8:15 from Lincoln Financial Field. You can catch that game right here on WEEI FM. Our Westwood One coverage will begin at 7:30. And the Red Sox have agreed to a one-year deal with pitcher Justin Wilson. The deal is believed to be worth $1.5 million with $1 million in bonuses. Trending brought to you by Time Out Market Boston. Experience the essence of Boston's culinary and cultural scene at Time Out Market Boston, nestled in the Fenway. From live music sessions to food and beverage tastings and everything in between, Time Out Market Boston showcases the best of the city under one roof. I'm Stiz. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More afternoons coming up.
Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Yeah, I think I'm working towards that. I think that's more of a perspective thing. I wouldn't say, you know, with me, I'm just trying to build on every day. I think, you know, it's more of a thing for the outside crowd to say. I think I've come a long way within the system, learning the system, knowing what to do, knowing where guys line up, getting in and out of run checks and pass things. So, you know, I think, but I wouldn't say better, I'd just say more comfortable. I think, you know, a lot of stuff is coming to tie together. You know, I think I'm still a lot of the same players and, you know, still the same player and same plays that, you know, I've made in college making today. So, I think just building on, getting more comfortable in this offense and just growing as a, you know, as a young adult.
Drake May yesterday talking about his development, how he's working on himself every day. It's Christian Arcand. It's Andy Hart. It's WEEI Afternoons. Nice to have you with us here today. Tommy Curran will be joining the show here in about 10 minutes. Looking forward to talking with him. I wanted to sort of circle this back to our initial conversation that we had in the first hour about the Crafts and how they're maybe looking to the outside for help on developing Drake May and how to develop a young quarterback and what that may entail, what it is exactly that they're looking for, and what it is that they're not satisfied with the current regime and how they're handling Drake May. So we talked earlier about the pros and cons of the way he's been handled and the way he's been developed so far. There's not really a lot to discuss, I don't think. I mean, he's been playing well. It seems like, generally, the biggest complaint people have is that they didn't start right away, and the biggest thing people are happy about is how he's looked. And it's hard to really know, unless you're there at practice every day, what kind of impact Alex Van Pelt's having on him. He's saying positive things about him. Mayo is saying positive things about him as well. I expect Mayo and Van Pelt to really pour it on right now that this report's out there from Breer and others now that the Crafts are looking outside the organization and trying to figure out what the best path is and best way to support their quarterback. So I guess the question here is, what are they not satisfied with? What is it that they think needs to be better? What are they looking for?
I would start with talent if I were them, but that's not something you call around the league for.
No.
I mean, you do if it's the trade deadline, but
right.
Not.
That's come and gone. So.
So I would say they must not be happy totally with the play calling and the scheme. That's the only thing you can point to, because the pure developmental aspect of Drake May, inside accounts, outside, whatever, everybody seems to agree he's come a long way. And he's a young guy. Everybody told Bill Belichick, oh, he's young. He just needs reps. He's this. He's that. He looks like an NFL quarterback. He looks very good to me. And I'm biased. I'm a homer. But I was just thinking about it. Like, Houston. Everybody's talking about how C.J. Stroud might have come back to reality a little bit. Getting sacked a lot. A lot of sacks down there. Or pick whoever you want. Caleb Williams. Or Spencer Rattler was one to me, who I know was a later round pick, but a lot of people thought there were certain people that thought Spencer Rattler was as good as some of the guys that got forced into the first round. He was a train wreck in the game I watched for the Saints.
He was bad with the Saints.
Absolute
game
train
him,
wreck.
Yeah.
Did not look like he belonged on an NFL field. There has been no regression from Drake May.
Nope.
There's been no obvious facet of his game that doesn't look like it belongs on an NFL field, right? The biggest complaint people have on our text line is that he doesn't slide. That's literally might be the biggest. Your biggest complaint is turnovers, to which I would say he's a rookie.
Yeah.
Like Peyton Manning,
whoever. And I acknowledge that when I say that. I mean, I'm willing to sort of look the other way on some of these, but you can't, you know, I'm not going to overreact, but you can't not react at all.
But what do you not like?
That's it. I mean,
other than the stat column saying fumble or interception, visually speaking, you watch a 60-minute football game from start to finish, and I'll include, like, leadership and play call, like, everything he does.
Yeah.
What do you not like?
I think his accuracy on short passes is not great, and I think he has decision-making problems sometimes. Those are the two main things. If we're gonna really nitpick, I think in the short game, he does sort of overthrow sometimes, or he just misses, and sometimes you can see him out there making a bad decision. I mean, you saw it last week. So that's it. I mean, that's, again, as a rookie, as a 22-year-old rookie, I'm not expecting him to have a perfectly polished game when he goes out there. But those are two things I've noticed.
And decision-making, I would say, is something that challenges every quarterback not named Brady, Mahomes, and Burrow, or whatever. Mm. Like, Josh Allen faces decision questions.
He does.
Maybe that's quieted this year because he's been better and cleaner with the football. Mm-hmm. But my point is, he looks like as about a positive a product as you could field in mid-November when you sat him for a month and a half as you could possibly ask for at this point. So whatever he is and whatever they've done has worked in terms of the development of Drake May. So it has to be offense, scheme, something like that. And what I would argue is Drake May looks kind of special to me. He looks like he's a special quarterback in that he's NFL ready, which was something his last guy here was supposed to be but wasn't. So if he's special, why are you looking to upset the world around him?
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If he's special, Alex Van Pelt may not be the best offensive coordinator and play caller.
Right, but he's his coordinator.
And that would be my point. I'd rather have the 12th best play caller if the special quarterback likes him.
Yeah.
Because you disrupt that and things can go sideways.
If you think that he can work with other offensive coordinators and maybe even that they're better, then you have to really be convinced that they're going to hit it off right away, that there's going to be chemistry right away, that they're going to sort of speak the same language and be able to, you know, to be coached up by. And I think that Drake May seems like the type of kid who can be coached by most different kinds of coaches. Like, Mac Jones had a specific type of coaching style that he liked,
right?
Despite what he said, you know, he didn't really like getting coached hard. But either way, I think that May is sort of a guy who rolls with it a little bit better and is more of a yes sir, no sir than, hey, why are we doing this type of player, which is what Mac Jones was. So, again, you know, like Bailey Zappi. Like, Drake May, personality-wise, is a lot more Zappi than he is Mac.
Yes.
And I think that that's something, when it comes to the coaching, is useful. You know, well, okay, this kind of rolls with the punches. He may not exactly get it right away, but he's open to learning and that sort of thing. He strikes me as that kind of player, that kind of young player. Not all young players are like that. But despite that, if you want to switch things up here, and I think we have to at least give it to the end of the season to see what the finished product of this season is like for him. It's his, you know, fourth start that he just made. But if it's good, if you're talking about a good situation, a good relationship, progress being made on a week-to-week basis, it's gonna make it very hard to move on from Alex Van Pelt.
So I've reached the point, and you know from minute one, I was live with Keefe on the night program when they hired Alex Van Pelt.
Yes.
I hated it.
You spit on the floor,
I kind of did. I kind of actually felt bad afterwards at how negative I was about it.
But I remember Jones and I, we had left, obviously, and we came back the next day, and we were both like, hey, did you hear Hart last night? Did you hear him ripping Van Pelt? I was like, yes, yes, I did. Jones loved it. This is back
of
when,
course
Jones,
he did.
When Jones used to be evil. He yep. loved it. But yeah, I remember that night. I remember you said.
I have a conscience, and I felt a little bad about it. But now I have reached the point, because of the talent and the comfort level between May and AVP, the only two people I would consider to bring in as play callers would be Brian Daboll, because I like the Josh Allen tie-in there, and sure. I like that he has a tie-in here, and Stefanski, but only if AVP signed off on Stefanski. If he's like, that guy's a great coach, I'm comfortable working with him, if you want to bring him in to call plays, we'll all be better for it. We'll win faster, we'll be better. I'm not beating the bushes for a play caller.
Yeah.
So it's either Brian Daboll, Stefanski, or just stick with AVP, because it kind of is working.
Yeah, so far. I mean, so far you can't. And this was something that even when they were out there having a terrible time with Jacoby Brissett, it seemed that, well, it's not really about Jacoby Brissett. It's not really about what the offense looks like when he's running it. It's not really about whether they're winning. It's about one thing. This whole season is really about one thing, and that's the quarterback. And yes. How's it going? And how well? And maybe Drake May, in his private moments, or when he's talking to Robert Kraft or whoever, Bill Belichick, Gerard Mayo, or whoever it is after the season, will be honest and say, yeah, "This is how I actually feel about this. I'd like it if we had someone who was more innovative, or someone maybe a little younger, someone who ran a different style that I'm more used to, or whatever it is that he actually thinks." And maybe he really likes Alex Van Pelt. I don't know, but that's maybe something we're not privy to. Either way, unless something like that happens, You got a first year, it's not like someone else is going to be signing Alex Van Pelt away for you to be a head coach somewhere, like with Josh McDaniels. This is who you got. This is right. Who you're stuck with.
And change is inherently risky. That's the other thing. If you change, even if you bring in what you think is the greatest ever, there's risk.
Yep, absolutely. All right, time to talk to Tom E. Kern, NBC Sports Boston, who is brought to you by FlexCar. Save thousands with your flexible car lease at FlexCar.com, and by Drains by James, Eastern Mass's leader in residential and commercial drain cleaning and pipelining at DrainsByJames.com. At Drains by James, they give a poop about your pipes. Hi, Tom E. Kern. How you doing?
How are you, fellas?
Doing well. How are you? What's going on? What's new in the Tom E. Kern verse?
Everything's great. Had to take an hour off. Middle son actually passed the bar exam. He was sworn in as an attorney today, so we're an hour late. So thank you for asking.
Well, that's tremendous. Bravo.
Got his mom's brains, huh?
Passing the bar. That's not an easy thing to do. That is congratulations to all on the first try, too. Congratulations to all the Kerns. That's great. Let's
thank
get
you,
into
buddy,
absolutely. Let's get into the Patriots here. This report that has come out. I believe it was Breer who had it. You've heard Ted Johnson and others comment on it on your network, Tommy. And that is the idea that the Crafts are looking outside the organization for help on how to develop and foster their rookie quarterback. What do you make of the idea that the Crafts are doing that? And what does that mean for people like Gerard Mayo and people like Alex Van Pelt?
They are doing it, and I think that's the due diligence you should engage in when you watch your young quarterback who's the third overall pick, and you understand, as Robert Kraft has said to me, coach and quarterback are the two things that you need to succeed in the league, period, end of story. So if that's the case, and you think you have a keeper in Drake May, which on many levels I think they do, he's going to have worse days, he's going to have better days, but he's always going to be a very stable guy, I think. Again, 22, but from what I see, a very stable person. He's going to be here for the rest of the decade. Lord willing, it seems. So you want to make sure that the network around him is as good as it can be. We understand that the Patriots blew things up with Bill in moving him out and really didn't have a succession plan in place because they did it a year earlier than they anticipated because of the results of 2023. So if Alex Van Pelt was not your first pick or second, third, or fourth, and you've hired him, you should, as the end of that year comes, right now, say, what do we want to do going forward? Is this guy who was our fourth or fifth pick the guy that we want to stick with? Are the receivers coach where we want them to be? A tight ends coach? What about the overall quality control? Is Gerard doing the job that we think he should be? So I don't blame the Crafts in the least for trying to maximize around him. But I think it's inescapable to look at the job Alex Van Pelt has done with Drake May specifically and say he hasn't done a good job. You guys were just talking about it. What was the number one job this year? Developing Drake May. And it's funny, I was listening to some people talk about May yesterday and on a rival station, and they said that they hadn't really seen a difference between the May of North Carolina and the May of now. And it was unanimous as they had their conversation. I'm like, what are you looking at? He is vastly better than he was. He was one of the most, no, I shouldn't say that, hyperbole. He was a fairly inaccurate quarterback last year at North Carolina at times, missed easy throws. His footwork wasn't great. He would open up for no reason. He would seek off platform throws. And you just don't see, he's one of the most accurate, if you look at the analytics, one of the more accurate throwers in the league right now, at least in the top 10, with some very good company. So he has developed, but I do think the Crafts, ownership, anyone involved should be saying, are we doing the best thing for the kid?
So, Tom, and include names if you'd like, but just be vague if you would prefer to be that way. But who would they be asking? Are we talking about, like, owners, GMs, coaches, media, young quarterbacks,
you know, ex-coaches?
It could all of the above. I mean, would you – well, probably not Bill. but
not him.
You know, guys who have been around this team, guys who have been around the league, you have a network, I would imagine, of owners, GMs, coaches, people you've worked with in the past. You know, Bill O'Brien, I'm sure they're on decent enough terms with him. Bill O'Brien, Josh McDaniels, anybody who would look at it and say, look, these are the things that I would be thinking of. These are the things that you could probably do better. These are the things that I like. I would think that that would probably be the realm in which they would go. I haven't specifically heard from direct sources as to who's been called, what's been said, anything like that. But I do know that it's something that they are doing, and I think that they should do.
In the event that they're trying to foster a better environment for him, I think the biggest complaint that people have, and this is, you know, fans that call the show and things like that, Tom, but I think the biggest complaint people have is less so with the coaching and more so with the supporting cast that Drake May has to work with on a weekly basis. Isn't that more of an Elliott Wolf issue than it would be a Van Pelt or Gerard Mayo thing to call around about?
Yeah, and I think we're defaulting to, yeah, it's a very good point, but I think we're defaulting to Alex Van Pelt. And if they're talking about what's the network of people and support we should have for this player, it doesn't necessarily have to be blow the offensive coordinator out.
Right.
It could be, well, should you explore trades for wide receivers? Since good wide receivers don't usually, the best wide receivers don't hit the free agent market. We're going to see this in March. It's going to happen again. The best wide receivers on the market are probably going to be like Chris Godwin, who is a very, very, very good player who's got a blown out leg right now. And you're going to have to make a decision. And I just threw that out there. I'm not even sure he's a pending free agent. He may be, though.
He is.
He is.
But, yeah.
So it's going to be, what do you want? What do you prioritize? Do you prioritize scheme? Do you prioritize the relationship between the player and the coach? You know, Tom Brady and Charlie Weiss had a great relationship. And it maintained all the way through with all the other offensive coordinators. Is May, at this point, sold on Alex Van Pelt? It kind of sounds like he is. Same thing with Mayo. So maybe the attention is more on personnel, as you pointed out, because that really is it. To me, it's personnel, quality control, and coaching.
What are
those three things?
Oh, you did. You did one of those pauses again. You
nailed you with that one.
Son of
a. I know.
How did you? What'd you think of the leadership evolution that Drake May took last week? First in the, tell everyone telling us that he stepped up in practice, didn't like what he saw, and then even I would say to some degree we got a little visual of him mic'd up in the Patriots video, the locker room going up to every lineman. Certainly seems like you said it earlier. He's 22 years old, but in terms of leadership, it seems like it comes kind of naturally to him.
It's weird, too, because some guys can do that, and it doesn't look natural. It looks artificial or like, well, I'm supposed to do this, so I'm going to do it.
Right.
Like, there was something about Matt Patricia slapping helmets before every game with every player that just always smacked him. And players love him. Yep. I talked to Chris Long today. He swears by Matt Patricia. Mayo, all those guys. They love the guy. But I just always thought there was an angle behind it. And I just don't think that May is I don't think May has a greater angle. He wants guys to play well with him and for him. Mac was kind of an angle guy. Like, it never struck me. And I don't think he meant to be. But there is, even when May stands there and explains that I should, it's my role, it's part of my job to do that, and he goes and does it, I think he would has probably been doing it since he was in seventh grade. Probably, and I'm not saying other guys didn't, but he's just such a natural football player to me that I think he's not self-obsessed. And I think that sometimes quarterbacks can be. And we hear him talk about some of the mistakes that he makes, and he doesn't lose his mind over them. It's kind of they roll off his back. Like that throw last week against the Bears, I think it was Van Pelt said today, you know, that's a tuba player throw. It should hit the tuba player. And May said the same thing. Hey, you know, I have to throw. I was trying to throw that out of bounds. Didn't do a very good job. But he didn't lose his mind over it. And his teammates picked him up defensively. They didn't score off of that, the Bears. So it's moving in the right direction, incrementally for a bad team, but moving in the right direction.
All right, time now for the Flex of the Game, presented by FlexCar. Ditch the dealership and save thousands with FlexCar. Rams in town this weekend, Tommy. What is the Flex of the Game?
Flex of the Game is that the Patriots have to flex up and bow up on defense the way that so many teams have against the Rams. Rams are 31st in the NFL in yards per carry. So they don't generate much. They're under 100 yards per game on the ground. Now, the Rams going to come in here and go, everybody runs on these guys. I don't care what happened last week. Everybody runs on these guys. They probably will because they probably have designs on a playoff berth. So if the Patriots can stop the run, if they can flex against the run, that's good news for New England.
Can they carry that defensive effort against Chicago? And I know that probably had more to do with Chicago than the defensive front here, but is that something that can carry over on a week-to-week basis, do you think? Will they have confidence and momentum from that coming into this game?
I think they will. I think they did a much better job on some of the particulars, setting the edge with Keon White and Anthony Jennings did an excellent job of it. I thought Tavai had a good game. Marcus Jones and the edge tackling was really good. I thought Marcus Jones had a great game. And the safety play, Del Pettis continues to be a player who's rising, same with Mapu. So, but you're going to go against the coach and Sean McVay and a veteran quarterback at Stafford who's going to look at it and go, okay, see this? Yeah, it's like a 9-man blitz. They're not going to run that against us. We'll shred them. So they're going against a system and a scheme that is well-established that has an app for everything the Patriots are going to try and unveil. So they're going to have to be fundamentally sound against the Rams, who are not exceptional up front right now. So do the Patriots roll the dice and say, we can outsmart McVay or we can overwhelm Stafford and get to him, or do they sit back and play coverage more often?
That is the voice of Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston, Quick Slants, etc. Tommy, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you again on Sunday for sure, and again next week as well.
All right, look forward to it. See you guys.
All right, Tommy Curran. Father of a attorney now, it appears, which
that's impressive.
Bravo, again, that is, it's a tough thing to do.
Good genes from the mom.
Fun thing to be celebrating, absolutely, absolutely. So there you go. Congratulations to the whole Curran clan. By the way, if you missed any part of that interview with Tommy Curran or with Tom Giles earlier on in the show, you can go back and listen to the podcast anytime. Just subscribe to WEEI Afternoons on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcast. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll get to some of your phone calls and the Bruins are in action tonight. Monty Watch back on. They've won 4 out of 6. We'll talk about that next.
AUDACY. Type that into your app search, then download.
More of Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
David Pastrnak after the Bruins 3-2 win over the St. Louis Blues in St. Louis, talking to our own Razor Raycroft there. I don't know if you saw in that game, Razor predicted that comeback. In the second intermission, he's like, you know what? I saw a comeback in this game. And then they scored 3 straight goals in the third period. That's amazing.
Well, I don't know if he believed it.
Doesn't matter. He still called it.
Because he said something like, no better way than a 3-goal comeback win or something like that.
Yeah.
I saw that hit. And I was like,
Homer.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay.
I was mocking
okay,
him on my in my chair.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then who's laughing now? Anyways, David Pastrnak there talking about the shoot-first mentality that not only he, but guys like Charlie McAvoy and others, I think, are trying to embrace here. And they better embrace it quick because they got the Dallas Stars tonight in Dallas, a team that put them right in their place in the middle of that three-game losing skid earlier on in the season where they lost to Utah, Nashville, and then Dallas back at home. 5-2 was the tune they lost there. And that was right around the time where the seat for Monty was getting real hot, and then they play Toronto. It's 3-3 in overtime. Marchand scores the game winner, and the seat cools right back down, followed by back-to-back losses after that, and we've sort of ridden the roller coaster ever since then. Actually, since those two losses to Philly and Carolina, the Bruins have won 4 out of their last 6. They have 18 points. That's 5 behind Florida for tops in the Atlantic Division. They're also 4 behind Toronto, so they're in third place in the Atlantic right now at 8-7-2. Certainly not anything to be overly proud of, but it may have given Montgomery a little bit of breathing room, or maybe it didn't, depending on who you ask. I think this is another one of those games tonight where if the Bruins go out there and get smoked, then we're going to be having the same conversation again, and I wonder how many times we can have this conversation before something happens.
Absolutely. First of all, I think Pasta and the Bruins may have been listening to our program because point number one of Bridget's three-point plan that really only had one point.
The one-point plan, yes.
Was shoot the puck and put it in the back of the net.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that was her very simple. And, well, I'll be damned it worked. So, good job, Bridget. They're listening to you. They're putting it in action on the ice, which might put you one step ahead of Monty in terms of the pecking order with the Bruins. I do wonder, the way you just articulated it, how many times can we have this conversation? So, Scoops Keefe, he's on the hot seat,
mm-hmm.
unless he turns it around. Has he turned it around? They're a playoff team right now.
Yeah, four out of your last six is turning it around.
Okay,
so he's
off the hot seat.
Well, not well, necessarily.
Not so fast, my friend.
Right. I mean, that's the beginning of a turnaround. I don't know if they've officially turned it around, but I mean, I think, you know, winning 4 out of 6 is with some bad losses sprinkled in there. I mean, it's not like they're going off and reeling off a crazy win streak. And I think that when you think of the Bruins and you think of them playing well, it's better than 4 out of 6, you know, like that's sort of the point. Winning 4 out of 6 has been so foreign to them this year. They have only won back-to-back games twice all season. So this is an unusual start for the Bruins. And I think that nature of that and how the starts they usually get off to is what's got the Jacobs all hot and bothered and Neely all hot and bothered and everybody sort of turning and looking at Montgomery because, in part, those guys don't want to admit the failures they had in the offseason and putting this team together, but also because this is not Bruins hockey. You know, you don't get off to slow starts in Boston. It just doesn't happen.
So let me ask you a question. If they had given him a 2-year extension in June,
mm-hmm.
would we have ever had any of these conversations with the same exact everything else?
No.
Right? So the
cause he'd get at least until, you know, 3/4 of the season. You know, like if it was really bad and it seemed like they were going to miss the playoffs, then maybe they would have done something. But, yeah, they've created this conversation this early in the year.
It's weird. He's a lame duck coach without an extension,
mm-hmm.
but you're still firing him.
Right.
And firing somebody means they're under contract.
Yeah.
So because he has a half a season left on his contract, we're going to fire him. If he had a year and a half, 2.5 years, we wouldn't fire him. Despite the same malaise, despite the same losses, it's just a weird status for him as a guy who's had two very good regular seasons, who won a playoff series a year ago. And I would also question, let's just say they split with the Panthers
right.
in that first week. Would that have changed anything? Or let's just say they win at Florida to open the season. Does that change the feel? Even if you end up in the same spot, you're third in the Atlantic.
Yeah, 8-7-2, if you had beaten Florida both of those games, if those were two of your wins.
Or
even just one of them, sure. Yeah, that changes a lot.
It's so
crazy. It changes a lot for me. It does, yeah.
The fine line that he is walking right now
mm-hmm.
with his career as the head coach of the Boston Bruins. And I don't think it's done. I absolutely agree with you that they are one horrific game away from an axe falling.
Yep.
And I
thought that Ottawa game might be the horrific
yep.
game with the axe falling. But, you know, they bounced back from that, beat St. Louis, and here we go. You got Dallas, who's a good team and who kicked your ass a couple weeks ago. Let's see. Maybe this is the horrific game. But, again, when you've won 4 out of 6, the horrific game, even if you have a bad game mixed in between there, what kind of scale are we grading them on at this point?
I don't know. That's my point. Their scale. And, like, do they already know? Do they already know who the next person is? Do they already know who they're promoting, bringing up, whatever?
I would think so.
Because once you know that, it's like...
Once Scoops Keith knows that the seat's hot, then I imagine they know who the next guy's going
to
be.
So that makes it weird to me, too. It's like if you think about getting divorced, well, feel like you're already going down the road of divorce, right?
Right.
Like once you've crossed that, or you think about retiring, the old one from Parcells, once you think about retiring, you're pretty much already retired. It's just when you make it official. So they've kind of already fired Montgomery in their mind.
Yeah.
Doesn't it feel that way?
It does, kind of, yeah.
And then it's just keeps being delayed by, it's not the time, it's not the time, it's not the time. Well, maybe it's the time.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It's very early in the season.
Yes.
You're coming off of not a bad showing last year.
No.
It's not like you embarrassed yourself. You lost to the Stanley Cup champions, and you gave them a decent little series there. I mean, I don't know. It could have been better, I guess. But, yeah, coming into the season, it wasn't like, okay, Monty, if you don't get off to a great start, you're out of here. But it was bad enough, and those two losses to Florida just set the season off. Such a bad step. And people yelled at me, it's too early to say that, Arcand. No, it isn't. Not for someone like Monty, it's not. Those two games were important.
Yep.
And they got humiliated in those games.
Absolutely.
Come on. That's a bad way to start the year. And they haven't really picked themselves up off the ice yet. You know, they're over 500, and that's fine. And they're still hanging around because they're not one of the bad teams
team
in the league.
And...
But they're a middling 500-ish team.
Right.
Which is, I think, everybody had higher hopes than that.
I guess I
certainly did.
I just feel like they've started pulling the Band-Aid off just very slowly, and it's pulling one hair at a time, and then they pause, and they pull another hair at a time. Because, like, if you had to bet right now, is he the coach of the Bruins come playoff time?
No.
Okay, same.
I'd bet no.
I'd bet no, too. So then what are we waiting for? And no disrespect to him. I'm not trying to run
and
him out of town.
And I might even say I want him to not be the coach
at
that point. It's
just
the way
feel
things
of
are
it.
Going and the things that we've heard, and it just sort of seems like, yeah. And there's been no contract offer or anything. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. By the way, you can listen to WEEI on your smart speaker. Just say play 93.7 WEEI. We will return with some more Patriots talk. The Crafts may be unhappy with what's going on here with Drake May. We'll revisit what it is that they expected. We'll go behind the glass with Stiz and see what he's got for us today. And odds and ends coming up as well with your phone calls at 617-779-7937. Quick break. We're right back.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.